Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and each week we discuss a new aspect of UFOs and the paranormal. And this week we have a really exciting show. Our guest is Robert Damon Schneck, and we're going to talk about his book, The President's Vampire. Now, before I introduce our guest, I'm going to give you our weekly news, and there's some interesting things definitely going on. Fate Magazine just released its new issue, and they had an interesting story I thought I would share. Apparently, in France, there is visions of the Virgin Mary appearing in this one church. Devout Christians are flocking all across Europe to this one church in France, where both Jesus and the Virgin Mary are appearing regularly to worshippers, apparently over the past 6 months. Now, these holy visions are being taken seriously by local church officials and are being investigated by a bishop. So, apparently, the visions usually begin with the whole building trembling in the middle of a prayer meeting, and then various worshippers fall off their seats, shaking violently or becoming sick. And then a few come around a few minutes later saying that they had a vision of Jesus Christ or the Holy Virgin who spoke to them. So, I don't know. It's interesting. I guess you'd have to go there and find out for yourself. But this stuff is going on all over the world. Just all sorts of crazy stuff. Lots of UFO stuff going on. MUFON just released its statistical monthly report for December 2006. And no surprise, the UFOs are still here, and the United States leads the world with the number of reports, at least for MUFON, with 160 cases. And, of course, most of these are just sightings, distant sightings. And actually, California, again, leads the number of reports from all the other states, which seems to be pretty consistent. Let me see, what does it have here? 24 sightings in California. And what's interesting is there were 17 landings and 22 cases involving entities. So there you go. There's definitely still stuff going on. But probably the most exciting thing going on with UFOs right now is a UFO sighting over O'Hare Airport in Chicago. Now, this just hit the news a couple of days ago, but apparently this sighting took place in November. And a group of United Airlines employees swear that they saw a saucer-like flying object hovering low over Chicago's O'Hare International Airport. And workers told the Chicago Tribune that they saw this UFO hovering over the airport on November 7th. It floated above the airport for several minutes before it shot through the air, leaving a hole in the cloud layer. A United supervisor reported the object to air traffic controllers, who said that they did not see anything on radar. And FAA spokeswoman Elizabeth Corey said that lack of evidence pretty much closes the matter as far as the agency is concerned, and that the FAA will not investigate any further. She said that, and I'm quoting here, "Our theory on this is that it was a weather phenomena. That night was a perfect atmospheric condition in terms of low cloud ceiling and a lot of airport lights. When the lights shine up into the clouds, sometimes you can see funny things. That's our take on it." Now, the employees who saw this object are not buying this story, and they've actually given some really impressive testimony, and they say it was nothing like this. It was a saucer-shaped object, and so I don't know. This is where the controversy is standing. The National UFO Reporting Center and other agencies are investigating the matter. So we will see what happens. And what else? We got one other little bit of exciting news. The French Space Agency is planning to publish its UFO archives, make its archives public. Now, for those of you who are up on the UFO situation, back in the year 2000, they published their Cometa report, which was one of the most scientific investigations, really, of the UFO phenomena, official from the government. So it's really exciting. This is really amazing news. They're going to publish this archive online. The names will be anonymous of the witnesses, but a Jacques Arnold says the database contains around 1,600 incidents. Jacques Arnold is an official at the National Space Studies Center in France. And so it's got 1,600 incidents. So this is pretty exciting news. They've been collecting this stuff for 30 years, and this is really a good step, I think, towards the end of the cover-up and people accepting the UFO situation as official. I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's just the UFO situation is always evolving. I think it's a really volatile situation. And that's basically it on our news tonight. Let me get to our guest. Our guest is Robert Damon Schneck. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. S-C-H-N-E-C-K. And we're going to talk about his book, The President's Vampire. Now, if you are at all interested in the strange and unusual, then Robert Damon Schneck is your man. He's been doing this for quite a while. And this book, his latest book, The President's Vampire, he's put together a collection of 8 of what Fortean magazine calls, and I'm quoting here, accounts so out there that even the best read collector of oddities will take notice. And I actually looked the book up on Amazon.com, and it's got a lot of really good reviews. There's always one bad one, of course, but this book is actually getting some very, very, very good reviews. And what we have here is, I'll just tell you what it's about a little bit. One chapter focuses on an event in 1692 when a group of Massachusetts villagers were attacked by a band of angry ghosts. And there's another story about a group of teenagers who disappeared in New Jersey in 1978. Also, there's a story about Ouija board manufacturer William Fold. And there's just all sorts of really interesting stories in here. Sea serpent accounts and many others. Of course, the title story about President Andrew Johnson, who apparently pardoned a vampire. We'll have to learn about that. But Robert,
yes.
Is here. Let me just tell you a little bit more about your bio. Sorry, but you're the author of not only The President's Vampires, Strange But True Tales of the United States of America. You're also the author of Detective Notebook, Are You Psychic? And you currently live in Brooklyn, New York, and your ambition is to become America's historian of the strange, which sounds like you're doing a pretty good job of it so far. So thank you, Robert. Thank you for coming to the show.
Oh, my pleasure, Preston. I'm glad to be here.
Sorry, I stumbled over that a little bit, but I got it out. So, yeah. This is really exciting, and how did you get involved in this kind of field? I mean, not everyone is interested in the paranormal and the strange and stuff like this.
That actually is the subject of the ending of the book, where I talk about it. How do people end up doing this stuff? And as nearly as I can tell, it's just a temperament you're born with. I know that some people get interested in it because they've had a paranormal experience or... they saw a television program or a movie that impressed them. It has always been this way with me, ever since I was a child. But maybe growing up in the mid-70s had something to do with it, because that's when television programs like In Search Of were popular. And I do remember one of my earliest memories of this was being taken to see a lecture by a man named Larry Kettelkamp, who wrote several books about ghosts. And I remember very clearly as a small child seeing a slide he had of the ghost on the Tulip Staircase, a very famous ghost photograph,
right,
and him giving this lecture. I must have been 7 or 8, but that might have had something to do with it. But I think it's a temperament.
Well, have you had any unusual experiences?
I have been in the room when things that were paranormal might have happened. Growing up, in fact, in the room I'm sitting in right now, when I was a kid, I used to occasionally smell cigar smoke late at night, which I never thought anything of it, except that sometimes the downstairs smelled like cigar smoke. So some people think that's a ghost, but I don't. I just think it's something that smells like cigar smoke. I did a little parapsychology at one time, and a friend of mine and I devised a kind of elaborate but interesting experiment to test psychometry, that is to say, the ability to get information from an object by touching it.
Right.
We devised an experiment that was really kind of interesting. We worked out all the variables to make sure that the people doing the experiment weren't using precognition or telepathy, so I had no idea what they were doing.
I've seen this done. I've seen people do it.
Well, this was, we wanted to see if psychics or sensitives or whatever people chose to call themselves would be able to determine an animal species from a very, very tiny sample of bone. We spoke to experts, and we got pieces of bone that were too small to be identified easily, even by experts. And we didn't even use the actual bone in each case. We divided it up so that the person was given a run of 9 choices, and they were at one point, the first one, they might see the bone. The second one, they might see a photograph of the bone. And the third one, they might get the bone inside a padded envelope, and they would try to read these. Well, of the 9 or 10 psychics that volunteered, one of them got incredible results. I mean, she not only described the first 3 bones, she not only identified the first 2 animals correctly, and the third one, she got awfully close, but she drew pictures showing where on the animal the bone had come from. And this was using a photograph that was so blurry. We used a Kodak, we wanted it to be cheap. We wanted it to be blurry, and it was. And one of them was in a padded envelope, and one of them was the bone itself, like I said. But I think she got the first 2 were hits. The rest of the psychics hit at what was considered chance.
Well, were these weird animals?
There's a store in New York City that sells exotic animal bones. So we were able to get things from like bears and muskox and
that's
zebras.
A great idea for an experiment.
It was a really interesting experiment. And like I said, we worked it all out. We spoke to people, parapsychologists who have been doing this for years, trying to get it really... getting it a legitimate experiment, and we did get that one result, but nothing that would suggest that it would work as a systematic approach to this, which is really what a lot of parapsychology, including remote viewing, has determined for years, that yes, you can get astonishing results, but you can't get them in such a way that it's a practical tool.
Right, or convincing skeptics.
Well, you know, there are skeptics and there are skeptics. I mean, there are people who will simply not accept anything. They're not skeptics. They're closed-minded people. And then there are people who are willing to accept the possibility but are not convinced by the evidence. And I think that's a reasonable response to a lot of this. I am convinced. I mean, I do think that there is some very good evidence for psychical phenomena.
Oh, yeah.
But,
you know, in that experiment you did, what's your explanation for how someone can perceive? I mean, how did she get these answers correctly? What's
well, I don't really look into trying to explain them. When you try to get into the nature of things, then I think what you often end up doing is you end up telling more about your culture and your times than you do about the nature of the phenomenon in question. For example, ghosts. Now, I believe people have ghost experiences. I think people see ghosts.
Oh, yeah.
I think objects sometimes move without being touched in the normal way.
I saw my mom's ghost. So.
I'm sorry?
I saw my mother's ghost.
Did you really?
So I believe in ghosts, and I know many people who have seen ghosts.
Well, I spoke to someone just the other day who not only saw a ghost, but there was a person in the room with him who also saw the ghost.
Wow.
Which is unusual. You don't get a lot of multiple witness accounts. So I do believe that there is something out there we call ghosts. However, what I don't do is I don't try to explain the nature of them, because then you always end up really just giving a description of what your culture thinks at the time. For example, I have been impressed by parapsychology, so I tend to look at them as a psychical phenomena. It could be a form of psychometry where you're reading the room. It could be a form of telepathy. It could be a lot of things. But that is really a reflection of the period I grew up in and my culture. If this were 100 years ago, I would be talking about spirits. That, you know, if I were a spiritualist, let's say, I would be talking about how these are the spirits of people who have died and are manifesting for some purpose, whatever that might be.
All right, well, I had a guy on the show the other last week, actually, who thinks that all ghosts, he told me this is his faith, that all ghosts are actually demons. It doesn't matter what they are.
Right. That's something, that's a modern idea. That is something that comes out of a branch of fundamentalism. I don't think that's a very common belief, but it is the people who
there's a lot of theories. Some call them waking dreams.
Exactly. And, you know, that's another one I've heard. That's a popular among, I've heard in skeptics. They call it a waking dream. Well, what's a waking dream? And if two people are in a room and they both see the ghost, did they both have the same dream? You can explain anything if you choose to ignore what people say happened.
Well, I think ghosts, I mean, it seems to me a ghost is what it appears to be. I mean, perhaps I am putting cultural influence over it, but it looks like a spirit to me from someone who's passed on.
Well, sometimes it might even be. I mean, there may not be a single explanation for what's happening. And I would suggest there probably isn't. But for me, it's really a question of what happened, what do people say happened, what do people think happened, how does it go into the historical record, and what does it end up saying about the culture? Because, like I said, I don't put a lot of faith in theories, because in 100 years, the ideas of parapsychology will look as comical as the ideas of animal magnetism look to us. You get to around the mid-19th century, and people were saying that everything was due to electricity. Well, that was because electricity was the hot topic. You know what you're getting now, actually? I was influenced by theories that were common back in the 70s. But now you're getting people who are talking about quantum physics, and they're equating the strange things that have been postulated for what occurs on a quantum level. They're saying that maybe that has something to do with the phenomena that are seen. Now, I would say that that's just the latest explanation. That's just the latest one.
Right. Well, and that movie, What the Bleep Do You Know, was really popular, and that's what that talked about.
Oh, did it really?
And which was actually a really interesting show. It had Ramtha and other paranormal researchers and lots of scientists, and they tried to bring it all together. But like you say, everything's got this cultural overlay. The UFO phenomenon has just got a huge problem with that.
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, in fact, it's actually very interesting. There's a book I'm working on right now. I guess I should be talking about the book I wrote, but let's just talk. There's a book I'm working on right now where I'm looking into the influence of spirit beliefs on domestic architecture in the United States, which might sound a little dry at first, but it talks about people that built houses based on plans, blueprints, communicated through mediums, and actually built in the real world, or houses that were built to bring about paranormal phenomena.
Oh, that's interesting. Because of the Winchester Mystery House here.
Exactly, yes.
Here in California, you know, I've been there. I wrote about that, and so that's perfect example then.
That is one of the houses I'm going to be looking at, actually. In fact, it's hard not to get sucked into that one because it's just so big and so remarkable and just such a unique building. So I have to keep myself from just not writing a book about that.
Right. What's the ultimate example? It's just so bizarre.
It is. And the fact is, there is no real explanation for why she did it. It is a mystery. I have one book written by a spiritualist who gives a spiritualist interpretation of it. I have other things that were written by people who claim that there really is no evidence that she was a spiritualist, no hard evidence. But like I was saying, you end up going around and around. And there was a point I was trying to make with all this, and I forgot what it was. Oh, yeah, I remember now. We're talking about UFOs. People like the early contactees, the George Van Tassels and the George Adamskys and the Truman Bethurins, those people.
Right.
What they described was often very, very similar to things that mediums had described, that they were in touch with a higher, more evolved minds, and that they were communicating information through these contactees that would raise up the human race. And one of the, since you're California, you know about the Integratron.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Or is it Integratron? Now, that was communicated to George Van Tassel by the Ashtar Command. Now,
another example you're talking about of a building that's been built by plans from another source.
Exactly. It's a good example of that. But you see, there was an evolution. We went from spirits to aliens. Actually, the results are very similar. Even the messages are very similar. But the nature of the phenomenon are different. One is accepting a whole realm of spirits. One is accepting a whole outlook of things that's different than the other one, which says it's aliens, not spirits. But the results are very similar.
Right. Well, are you suggesting that they're the same phenomena wearing a different mask?
Yeah, and I would also suggest that in 100 years it'll be wearing a different one. And in 100 years after that, it'll be wearing a different one again.
I'm not sure I'm convinced, though, because if UFOs aren't extraterrestrials, I just think the evidence for that is really extensive.
Well, that might be. Like I said, I don't really look at the nature. I'm not trying to explain these things.
Okay.
I'm trying to document them. I'm trying to, I just don't feel comfortable with the explanations because they always seem just as convincing to the people who are making them 100 years ago and 100 years from now, and we're always just on the verge of the truth.
That is interesting. You know, it's funny, we have UFO people now doing channeling, which are giving the same messages basically as you say, the mediums.
They really are very similar. In fact, they always reflect current concerns. Remember with George Adamski and George Van Tassel, it was fear of nuclear war, and then it became a fear of environmental degradation.
Right, I was just going to mention
both of those.
Yeah.
So that does suggest that what we're really seeing is a cultural phenomenon, but that doesn't necessarily close the door on other things.
Well, you know, I'm not entirely convinced because it could be just the spirits and the aliens are both seeing what's going on and are both giving the same warning. You know,
there's another possibility. Like I said, I don't know. And
how can we know? That's the problem with a lot of these things. We can't, you know, have the evidence really to make a solid conclusion.
Almost never. We're always dealing with very slippery subjects. And like I said, to my mind, explanations always tend to reflect the culture that makes them. And when they describe the nature of it, it is very satisfying to the person making the explanation. Okay, we see things this way. Ghosts are fallen angels. Ghosts are this, ghosts are that. And they can work out an entire rationale that makes perfect sense within their worldview. And I have no problem with that. I just, when you try to stand back from it, you say, all right, there's been this parade of explanations. The phenomena go on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, where does it starts out with angels and goes to, what, fairies and elves, and there's the succubi and incubi and all these different, I mean, it goes on and on.
Oh, it does. And some of them are specific to culture and to a time. For example, you don't hear much about, like, the Wild Hunt anymore. And that was a big thing in medieval times.
The Wild what?
The Wild Hunt, where a character called Herne the Hunter or Herlekin or this kind of demonic lord of the dead would ride through the woods at night collecting the souls of people that had died. And that was once a very common theme in medieval folklore. You come across these stories all the time. You don't come across that anymore. But what you will hear, for example, is a crisis apparition that takes place now can be the same as a crisis apparition that took place 300 years ago. someone that you know or close to is in serious trouble, maybe even dying, and they appear to you.
Right.
And these crisis apparitions have really been almost unchanged for hundreds of years. Now, I don't know what, like I said, I don't know their nature, but I know that people keep describing them the same way.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it really is interesting. And like I said, to my mind, it does suggest something real is happening, but we just don't know what it is.
Well, if this phenomena, I mean, if it's one or if it's many or whatever, if it's wearing different masks, I guess the trick would be to come up with the next mask it's going to wear.
In a way, that's probably the most profitable, that's something you can at least prove. You can at least suggest, well, I think the next form this is going to take is. I'll give you an example. You know Linda Godfrey.
Sure, yeah, she was on
the
show.
Sure. Now, Linda has
werewolves.
Right. Linda has been collecting these stories that are so bizarre that you read them and you say, this is impossible.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't research it until I actually had her on the show.
Oh, first of all, she's a friend of mine. She is wonderful. And
I was shocked. I mean, I could not believe it.
And once the lid was off, these stories started to pour in. Now, I would suggest that that might mean that there's some kind of change going on in our perception of whatever monsters are, that Bigfoot has had his day, and that there's a change going on, and now it's mutating into something else. I'll give you an example. Years ago, we're really talking about urban legends. We're not talking about the paranormal. But years ago, there were urban legends about something called the Green Man. And the Green Man was supposedly a man who fell into a vat of chemicals, and he was turned into this, he turned bright green, and he would only come out at night and terrorize people who had parked in lover's lanes. He was a pretty normal lover's lane monster. Now, over time, the Green Man was turned into a green Sasquatch. And because Sasquatch became the form of the monster, that became the great American monster. And all these monsters, like the Goat Man, used to be a centaur sort of figure. And now, then he became a Bigfoot character with a goat head and maybe hoofs. And now I'm suggesting that there's going to be another change, and that this werewolf kind of figure might be the next wave in monster sightings.
Well, werewolves go way, way, way back, though, don't they?
They do, but they haven't in American culture. There were a few odd sightings here and there, a few historical ones, but now it's up to date. It's happening now. Linda gets new reports all the time.
What's interesting is this stuff is real. I mean, it's absolutely physically real, I believe. It's actually affecting people and all of this stuff.
Well, people are certainly being affected. I would never deny that. But my question.
But you're saying it's not werewolves?
I'm suggesting that whatever it is now taking the form of werewolves.
And this is a theory that comes up with UFOs a lot. Jacques Vallée talks about this. And,
yeah, I don't know the UFO aspect of it. I have always been a little intimidated by UFOs. The field is too big, too controversial. Everyone's suing each other. So I kind of stepped back from UFOs. It was too much for me to take it on. You know, it's like I said, that's for people. UFOs is for UFO people,
right.
Saucer heads. It's for them. So I've always stayed a little bit back from it, but you can't get into this stuff without addressing it sometimes.
Right, right. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and our guest tonight is Robert Damon Schneck. And his book that's recently been published is The President's Vampire, Strange but True Tales of the United States of America. And you have another book, too, right?
Right. This one is for younger readers. It's from the Detective Notebook series that's published by Sterling, and it's called Are You Psychic?, in which I lay out some simple and fun experiments kids can do to check psychic phenomena, to do some simple tests, a little bit about divination, a little bit about thought forms, even spoon bending.
Yeah, this is good information. People need to hear this stuff. So do you have a website or...
I don't have a website, but anyone who's interested in the book can go to anomalistbooks.com, A-N-O-M-A-L-I-S-T books.com, and click on the list of books, and you can get to the book there or go to Amazon.
Okay, yeah, that's where I went. Yeah, you got a lot of good reviews there. Lauren Coleman, actually.
Yes, Lauren reviewed it. I was so happy when he reviewed it and liked it.
Yeah, he's the granddaddy in the field, no doubt about it.
So yes, he is.
What's this, your book, From the President's Vampire?
Yes.
How did you start to write that? What inspired you?
Well, it started when I knew that I wanted to do something bigger than writing little articles, because you can write little articles forever. I wanted to do something, a bigger project, and I wanted it to be about America, and I wanted it to be about the paranormal, but also just about very strange things, because I have a filing cabinet that is stuffed with newspaper articles, magazine clippings, things I had saved for years and years and years, and always said, I'm going to look into this one day. Well, I finally decided to do it. And I pulled out some of my favorite clippings. I mean, the clipping on the boys who disappeared in Newark, for example, I had cut out 16 years before I decided to look into it. Of course, this goes back to the pre-internet time when you couldn't just summon up 2,000 articles on a subject. You had to actually save the physical clipping. And so, like I said, I had been saving these stories for years and years and years, and finally just decided that it's time to look into them.
Well, what's good about your book, I think, is it's, you know, I mean, there's a lot of books about the paranormal, UFOs and ghosts and sort of general topics, but yours is such unusual stories.
Well, that's what I set out to do. I want, since I'm a fan as well as somebody who does the writing, I love that stuff. I love it. I mean, I get, somebody tells me, somebody emailed me a ghost experience they had the other day, and it gave me chills. It got me so excited. Just because this man had just had the experience, and it sounded like many others I've heard before, but it just fascinates me.
What did he see?
He is a truck driver. In fact, one of the things I'm collecting right now is stories by truck drivers, experienced by truck drivers.
That's a great idea, truck driver stories.
Excuse me?
Truck driver paranormal stories?
Truck driver's paranormal stories, bizarre stories, because after years and years of listening to paranormal radio, I realized one night that truck drivers have the best stories. You know, they're always on the move. They see more of this country than most of us will ever see. And they often are exhausted. So, you know, and they're often half hypnotized by that line in the road. So they're open to some strange experiences. And this was a man who'd been sleeping in his cab, and he heard a rapping on the window, got up, looked out, and there was a girl dressed in 1970s clothes between his truck and the truck next to his, and as he looked at her, she vanished. And what got me was the 1970s clothes. Because it's just the odd little details like that that tend to get my interest.
All right, 1970, that's funny. It's not that long ago, but it's long enough.
Oh, it is. And it's long enough so that the man who was president, just died at the age of 90-something.
Right.
But, so these were stories that for some reason struck me as stories that had been missed. They were stories that
just too bizarre for other people to even look at, probably.
Well, maybe, not that they were necessarily that, but they somehow got passed over. You know, everyone was running after Bigfoot, and then everyone was running after flying saucers, and then it was abductions, and then it was this, and it was that. Incidentally, this just to go back to something we were talking about a few minutes ago, with the possible continuity between spiritualism and the contactees.
Right.
One thing I just found out that I didn't know, but apparently this was known in the UFO circles, was I didn't realize that Betty Hill came from a spiritualist family.
Oh, I was not aware of that. I had heard that she had attended a number of seances.
I didn't know anything about this. I wrote her a few letters when she got sick, because her family said that she really appreciated cards and letters, so I sent her some letters. And I was just so interested to find out that she comes from a line of New England spiritualists, which is pretty much a classic. Here she was a politically progressive woman in a mixed-race marriage at a time when that could get you hanged in some states. And here she had the first a North American abduction experience that, as far as I know, the first one.
The first reported one.
Yeah, let's say the first reported one. And here she comes right out of a tradition of spiritualism, which, again, I doesn't prove anything. I just thought it was interesting.
Well,
I didn't know it.
It could be that phenomenon putting on its new mask right there.
Exactly. You know, there are some people, and I sometimes say this to myself. I say, am I being a coward? Am I simply ducking the whole issue? And maybe that's true to a certain extent. But I really do believe that there's something strange happening, and it takes different forms. And that form can be determined by culture. It can be determined by the person who's having the experience.
Well, it's funny. The people who investigate this stuff usually specialize on one aspect of it, and then that's what they believe in. And they kind of ignore the fact that all of these are connected.
They often are. In fact, one of the things, for example, is there are people, let's talk about cryptozoology, because I know a little bit about that. Like I said, I tend to avoid UFOs because I just don't know that much about it. You talk about cryptozoology, there are people who say Bigfoot is an animal like any other animal, a bear, an elk, a moose.
Right.
So what we're going to look for is we're going to look for droppings and footprints, and if somebody is going to tell us a story about a Bigfoot that walked through a solid wall or flew through the air or was transparent, we're not going to look at that story.
Or has a UFO connection even.
Exactly. You know, there's a whole bunch of those strange UFO Bigfoot stories. And when you start getting into that, your eyes roll, but why is it we're willing to accept one and not the other? Because it fits into what we want to believe.
Right. And the religious miracles, even those seem to be involved.
Oh, they definitely are. In fact, you know, what's interesting is when you opened this talking about those visions in France, there was somebody, the very famous case in Pennsylvania that Stan Gordon investigated about a man who, this was a farmer, who there was a flying saucer over his farm. This is what he said. A flying saucer had been seen. It vanished. Then these two transparent Bigfoots came walking down the road. He shot at them, and then it was around that time that Stan Gordon arrived, and the man went into some kind of an altered state, and he had visions of the apocalypse and death and all these terrible things that were going to happen, and he began acting in a bizarre way that was described as acting like an ape.
Yeah, I know this case, actually.
You do? Okay. So am I getting the details right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's other cases like this, too.
This is high strangeness. So are we going to ignore this one because it doesn't fit into our view of Bigfoot is an animal like a moose or a bear? Or flying saucers are alien artifacts that are visiting Earth for A, B, and C reasons. Again, we can pick and choose, but the strange ones are still going to be there.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about your book, because I'm sure some of our listeners want to hear.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
At least, you know, some of your favorite stories in that book.
Okay. So, well, let's see. One second.
I mean, you've got eight major chapters.
Yes. Yes. There are eight major chapters. I cover, for example, the Phantom Invasion of Gloucester, which took place right when the Salem Witch Trials were going on, and it involved some outlying farms in Gloucester that were attacked by what seemed to be a militia, and they looked like Europeans and Native Americans. Only the problem was that when you shot them, they fell down, got up, and ran away. And when they ran away, they sometimes didn't leave footprints in muddy, marshy areas. And when you tried to shoot at them, sometimes the muskets wouldn't fire. In fact, every time someone got a really good bead on them,
right,
the musket wouldn't fire. You're getting, you're making UFO connections.
I am. Yeah.
Of course. So this went on for a couple of weeks in midsummer 1692, and eventually it was decided that they actually called in a militia from another area because there was fear of an invasion from France at the time. And Ipswich, that's where the militia came from. And they decided, though, that they were just phantoms and could be ignored. And eventually the sightings stopped, and things got back to normal. But one of the things, like I said, that intrigued me about this was it was happening just when the worst of the Salem witch trials were getting underway. and so consequently, it's been forgotten. Every year, someone comes out with a new theory about Salem. It was sexual repression, it was ergot poisoning, it was this, it was that. All of which just ignores this very, very bizarre thing that was going on 15 miles away.
Which has to be connected.
It might very well be. Certainly, the main character in what was going on in Gloucester, his name was Ebenezer Babson. He was the first one who saw the phantom invaders. His mother moved away from Gloucester, from the farm, to Gloucester proper after the invasion, which is something else we'll get to that in a minute. And she claimed that she was being attacked by witches, so he might have brought the girls from Salem to Gloucester to act kind of like witch finder consultants.
Right.
And they claimed that, yes, this woman was being bewitched, and they identified the witches and all that. So he actually ended up getting caught up in the witch trials himself.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and of course, Gloucester is also the site of the first American sea serpent sighting, but that's another. And, of course, the famous Gloucester serpent that used to come in the 19th century year after year. But that's, you know, it's maybe one of those areas where the walls are thin.
Right. Well, see, you're making my head spin because I'm trying to... I have a tendency to, you know, compartmentalize the phenomena and say they're real and what they seem to be. And I can see that I can't do that.
Well,
to
can.
A certain extent.
I mean, there are sometimes we really can sink our teeth into something real.
Well, I mean, sea serpents seem to me pretty convincing. And flying saucers and ghosts and Bigfoot, they seem to me separate phenomena. Maybe they're related in ways that are... I think it's dangerous to say that they're all the same phenomena.
Well,
they're not dangerous.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying I don't know the nature of the phenomena.
Right.
I don't know the nature of it.
The story with the phantom invaders, I mean, when I hear that, I'm like, I don't know what to think.
With the what?
With the phantom attackers, marauders.
Oh, right. I don't know what to think either. It's a bizarre story. All I can think is that... Let's take a slightly mystical approach.
Okay.
And that is that people at the time were very concerned about an invasion. They were undergoing a lot of stress, which might have helped produce the trials in Salem. So maybe they produced thought forms. Maybe their minds projected these things. Well, that works if you're willing to accept the possibility of that, and also if you ignore all the evidence. For example, one of these phantoms fired at Ebenezer Babson, and they later dug the lead ball out of a tree. Supposedly, they saved it, and one of the things I'm really curious about is if someone still has it up in their attic somewhere.
Well, the stuff can leave evidence. That's what I think finds so fascinating about it.
Well, sure. I mean, let's say there are times when someone will, for example, start looking at a Bigfoot footprint, and they'll find, like, the dermoglyphs. Now, if those dermoglyphs are real, then you have to be talking about a real animal. How can it not be real? If they are artifacts, then someone has got technology for faking footprints that is absolutely astonishing,
right.
And the FBI should know about that. I go back and forth, and I sometimes get angry at myself thinking I might be a coward. I don't know.
Well, it's really overwhelming. I think this is what keeps a lot of people out of this field is, you know, they don't believe in UFOs because UFOs come with, what, telepathy and levitation and all sorts of Bigfoot and the whole thing. They just throw it out.
It goes even stranger than that. I mean, there are stories about phantom black dogs coming out of the bottom of flying saucers, and I even have a story about a winged Bigfoot. Yeah, it's not in that book. I probably should have thrown it in. I have a story about an encounter between Charles Starkweather, the 1950s mass murderer in Bigfoot. I found it in a book. I found it in some memoirs he wrote when he was in prison awaiting execution. When he was younger, he had been lying in bed in the morning, and he would see this figure, this massive figure with a bullet-shaped head, come up to his window and scream. Now, it sure sounds like a Bigfoot. And this was in 1950-something, before the word Bigfoot was even known outside of a very small area. And since he had no idea what that might be, he thought it was death come to scream at his window.
Wow. I think you found a real niche for your research here. Because a lot of people, like I say, specialize in... This is interesting. This is a lot of stuff I really haven't heard before.
Well, like I said, I wanted to do a book that people who are fanatics, people who read all these books, could get this book and find stories that they hadn't heard before, or stories that they might have heard before, but there had been new information, or there had been follow-ups that no one had done before, or nobody had ever really sat down and just dug into it. And the title story, The President's Vampire, like I said, it involves what a story that didn't turn out to be the way I was expecting it to be. I first came across it in one of those big collections like the Vampire Cyclopedia or something like that,
right,
where they told the story of a Portuguese sailor who in the mid-19th century was on a fishing boat out from Boston, and members of the crew began to disappear. One vanished, then another vanished, and the rest of the crew panicked. So the captain instituted a search, and he went down into the hold, and they found one of the sailors dead and drained of blood, and the other being held by this Portuguese sailor named James Brown, who was sucking the blood out of the body.
Oh.
He was put in irons and sent back to Boston, put on trial, found guilty, sentenced to death, and President Andrew Johnson commuted the sentence to life imprisonment possibly because he was mentally unbalanced. Brown. And according to the story, Brown went on to kill more men in prison and was eventually sent to St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Washington, D.C., where he finally died. Now, I thought, this is an interesting story. Even if there is not an actual paranormal vampire involved, I thought I might have come across one of the first serial killers in American history, which is always kind of neat too. So I began digging into this story, and I spent months. I went to national archives. I found people at museums and experts, and I spoke to them all. And it turned out that the story, as it appears in all of these anthologies and on several websites, is completely wrong. I mean, they got almost every detail wrong, even the year it happened. Brown wasn't Portuguese. He wasn't a sailor. Well, he was a seaman, but he wasn't a sailor. He was the ship's cook. They weren't on a fishing boat. They were on a whaling boat, and they were in the Indian Ocean. it is one mistake after another, and the biggest mistake was that two sailors hadn't disappeared. Brown had gotten into an argument with one of the sailors on the deck and stabbed him, and that was the murder. That's all that happened. Now, I must admit, I was disappointed. After all that research, I wanted a ghoulish story.
But
it raised a question of how did this happen? And how did he become connected with this? And that led to looking at the original newspaper account, the story that probably started it all, which appeared in one of Charles Fort's books. And he took it from a newspaper called the Brooklyn Daily Eagle. An article that appeared in 1892. Now, the interesting thing and the possible connection is that a few months earlier there had been a story in the newspapers, although not in the Brooklyn Daily Eagle as far as I know, about a vampire in Rhode Island. Members of the Brown family had been dying of tuberculosis, and when the son of the family became sick, the father, got the idea that maybe there was a vampire and that one of the dead members of the family was feeding off the sun. So he had his wife, his oldest daughter, and his youngest daughter, all who had died, he had them dug up. And the first two were decomposed enough so that no one worried, but the last one, whose name was Mercy Brown, she was not that decomposed, and they thought maybe she was the vampire. So so some internal organs were taken out and reduced to ashes and then given to Edwin, possibly to drink as an antidote. Now, I just suspect that perhaps the fact that two New England settings, both 1892 and both people named Brown, that maybe the stories got mixed up somehow when they appeared in the Brooklyn Daily Eagle. I mean, it's just that's the only explanation I can come up with, unless it was a slow news day, though, because the other stories on the front page that day are just like a shootout in Wyoming and some high school principal had died. So maybe they decided to jazz up the headlines a little bit.
Yeah, well, they did a little bit more of that in the old days, didn't they?
Oh, they did that all the time. I mean, and some UFO classics have, Aurora, Texas, the UFO that supposedly crashed into the windmill.
Right.
The story about the cowboys and the pterodactyls outside, Tombstone, Arizona. On and on. They really did. There was a lot of imaginative journalism at the time.
you know what's another interesting thing that I've noticed, talking to you has made me think this, is each time a new phenomenon rears its head, be it, whatever, elves or UFOs or Bigfoot, it persists. It may go underground for a little while, but sooner or later it's going to come back. And I say that because people are now, I know people who claim to be seeing elves.
Really?
With the little brown, green suits and little curly shoes.
Well, I think elves are one of those things that are so ridiculous that if people see them, they aren't going to tell anybody.
I can't see how anyone would believe them.
Well, that's just it. It is just so absurd. And, Janet Board published a book a few years back called Fairies, where she collected modern encounters with fairies. And the stories are absolutely bizarre. I mean, my favorite one involved some children who claimed to see little gnomes driving around in little electrical cars. And the strange thing was, they weren't the only ones who had seen them. So there is something odd going on around the fringes of normal life that people, you can ignore it. But it's so much more fun to look at it.
Well, reality is just a lot stranger, I think, than people have no idea.
No, they really don't. I mean, if you tell somebody that someone saw a flying Bigfoot near Mount Rainier, one that spread giant wings and flew away, you'd probably say that person was not to be relied on. But it keeps happening, and people keep seeing strange things, and I don't know what it is, but it does seem to happen.
Well, what I heard recently is Big Bird accounts, people being attacked by, I guess, thunderbirds, they've been called, birds with 50-foot wingspan.
Well, where? That's recent.
There was a couple accounts in Fate magazine. I don't know if it was recent, but I had never heard of this. Apparently, there's a whole big, long history of this.
Oh, yeah, there is. I mean, that goes back to old accounts of children being carried away by birds. There are stories of... The most famous one was Illinois. Lauren Coleman's brother, whose name... Jerome? Yeah, Jerome. He investigated that one. It involved some boys that supposedly some very large birds landed on their arms and tried to fly away with them. So that was probably the most recent one. And back in the 70s, there were sightings of what sure sounded like a pterodactyl in Texas. And there were some big bird sightings related to Mothman around that time in that area. And big bird sightings also in Pennsylvania. So big bird, pterodactyl, giant owl stories. They do show up every now and then.
That's just bizarre.
Yeah, it is. It is truly bizarre. And it's one of those things that really makes you, if you insist on these things being flesh and blood, it stretches your willingness to believe if you insist that that's flesh and blood. I would rather someone told me it was a ghost of a pterodactyl. Because I know people see ghosts.
Well, maybe time is not what we think it is, and things can just kind of pop in and out of time.
If that was true, it would certainly make things easier. Oh, excuse me.
And so, well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our guest tonight is Robert Damon Schneck. So your book, The President's Vampire, where again can people get this?
Anomalistbooks.com, A-N-O-M-A-L-I-S-T, books.com, or Amazon, of course. And it'll be in stores soon, but I'm not sure when.
And you have another book, Detective Notebook, Are You Psychic?
That's right. That's for young readers, and I think they'll really enjoy it.
Okay, cool. Well, we have like 2 minutes, so what haven't we covered? Do you have any?
Oh, gosh. I mean, the book, we haven't really talked about the book. We've talked about the paranormal. Let's see. I've got a story about a blind albino psychic serial killer that if you learn his name, he will hunt you down and kill you.
Back up for a second. Could you repeat that?
Yeah, the last story, The Bridge to Body Island, is about a blind albino psychic serial killer. And if you hear his name, you're transformed into a kind of a beacon. And as long as you think of his name, he will know where you are and he will hunt you down and take out your tongue and your eyes.
Well, this sounds like a perfect horror movie.
Well, let's just say that there have been inquiries from Hollywood.
Wow. So what's another one of these stories?
Well, let's see. We've got the mass disappearance of 5 young men simultaneously in Newark, New Jersey one night.
What happened there?
It's one of those stories that is so strange because it doesn't seem to be paranormal, yet they vanished. These 5 young men had spent the day moving boxes for a local contractor. He had dropped them off on a street corner, and they vanished. They broke up into two. There were 5 of them. They went away in 2 groups, 3 and 2, and sometime before midnight, they disappeared. And there was one clue that was collected maybe a few weeks later where a member of one of their families claimed to have received a phone call from them that came from Washington, D.C., and they looked into that. It did come from Washington, D.C., but nothing else, nothing else, nothing. It was so strange because, like I said, in decades, there has not been a single clue.
Well, I mean, for one person to go missing, or even two.
Exactly. That was my feeling about it. That's why I couldn't understand how this story could just have never even appeared on the radar. No one even has heard of it outside of Newark. I was born in Newark, and I grew up in New Jersey, so it was one of those things that would appear in the paper every 10 years ago or so.
Well, our time is actually up.
Okay.
So I want to thank you, Robert, for coming on the show.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Preston. I hope we can do this again sometime. Maybe we can even get to the book.
Yeah, definitely. The President's Vampire. I hope everyone listening goes out there and buys the book. It sounds like a really, really interesting thing. And you definitely keep up this research. No one else is doing it.
Oh, I definitely will.
All right. Well, thank you, Robert.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our guest tonight has been Robert Damon Schneck. Very, very interesting stories. Everyone should definitely go out and buy that book, The President's Vampire. And then next week, our guest is Thomas D'Agostino, and he's going to be talking about his book, Haunted Rhode Island. So thank you all for listening, and I hope you can join us next week. Have a good night.